The story of Jesus I told the children always reminds me of another rabbinic story. It's from the Hasidic Jewish tradition, and it's no surprise that it would be a reminder because, after all, Jesus was a rabbi, and he taught by telling stories, right? The Hasidic story goes like this. It was the time of prayer, and the faithful were gathered. As they were rocking and praying and rocking and praying, one man stood up and prayed aloud before the whole group. He said, "Though I have many ships that travel the seas with my goods to sell, and though I have many barns stored with many goods to go on ships to sell, I am as nothing in the sight of God." And he sat down. Well, it wasn't long before a second man stood up and began to pray aloud before the whole group. He said, "Though I have more ships than the man who just prayed, and more barns, and many more things to sell, I am as nothing in the sight of God." And he sat down. Well, taking a cue from these two, a beggar who was sitting in the very back and had been there praying stood up and said, "Though I have never seen a ship, and though I sleep in barns," and before he could finish, the two men who had just prayed stood up and said, "Sit down and be quiet. You're not important enough to be nothing in the sight of God." You know, Paul never knew Jesus, not in the flesh, not as far as we know. Never met him, never saw him, except on that one occasion, on the road to Damascus, when he heard that voice and was stricken blind, and then spoke to someone he was going to kill or imprison, and that person called him brother and spoke to him of God's love, and the scales fell from his eyes. Even so, Paul argued that he was not only a follower of Jesus, he was an apostle. Now, the word apostle means someone who is sent, someone sent on a mission. And he was not just sent on any mission. He was sent on a mission to all those people outside of the religion that he and Jesus shared, Judaism. Now, not everybody thought that was such a great idea. He had to defend both his role as an apostle, and he had to defend his mission as an apostle. And as he created communities, which included both Jewish followers of Jesus and Gentile followers of Jesus, each group tended to think that they were more important than the other. And he had to deal with that as well. Conflict in the church, can you imagine? Well, to those Jewish folks, he would argue, "Now, God has chosen you, God has made promises to you, but you were only chosen so you could be a light to all the other nations. You were the people who were to show everyone else the great love of the one true God. So don't think that you were chosen because you were so special to start with. You were chosen for a purpose, and that purpose was the purpose that I'm fulfilling in sharing that light with everyone outside our faith." And then to the Gentiles, he had to say, don't be arrogant and think you're better than Jews, and don't think that you have superseded them, that you can just cut off the Hebrew scriptures and cut off the Jews. Because you see, God chose and made promises to them, and our God is faithful and does not go back on promises. You just have to remember that you are wild olive branches grafted onto the domestic olive tree of Judaism. So Paul had to come up with some kind of argument that would encapsulate both of those attitudes. Now, as you know, Jesus was a storyteller. Paul, not so much. He was more of an argumentarian. His Gentile education had taught some of the storytelling out of him, unfortunately. So in his argument, he came up with a kind of dual argument that he makes in Romans. And it's got two parts. The first part is, I got some bad news for you. You have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And I got some good news for you. That very fact means that you are open to receive God's grace and mercy as a gift. And that's his basic argument. It's his argument in chapters 1 and 2 in Romans that some folks quote to exclude LGBTQ folks. But if you read the argument in its entirety, Paul is not condemning one group of people. He is condemning everyone. He says to everyone, you have no excuse. Why? Because we all depend on the grace and mercy of God. In the passage you just heard, he argues that we have all fallen short. We have missed the mark. We have not lived up to what God expected. But that very thing prepares us to receive God's grace as a gift. God's grace is not payment for services rendered. Ain't no services we can do that would earn God's grace. It is what allows us to begin to do what God has called us to do. And the greatest barrier to our receiving God's grace is the idea that, yeah, those other people need it, but we don't. Because you see, we're pretty good people anyway. We're sort of garden variety sinners, which means we're pretty good people. Not like that tax collector. Not like that beggar. And so Paul has to help people understand that he's not calling them broken to condemn them. He's pointing to our brokenness so that that brokenness can open us up to the grace of God. A few years ago, a philosopher, Alain de Botton, did a TED talk. And almost in passing in this TED talk, he mentions the change of wording that we have tended to use for people who are caught in poverty. He said in the 17th and 18th centuries, people were spoken of as being unfortunate. They were called unfortunates. Somehow fortune had not smiled on that person or that family. The circumstances of my life have allowed me to be where I am, and the circumstances of their life had allowed them to be where they are, but it wasn't their fault necessarily. There were larger forces at work. He said, but that's changed. And unfortunately, today, instead of calling people who are poor or trapped in addiction or whatever, unfortunates, we call them losers. And this was before the prominence of that word in this last electoral cycle. We call them losers. There are winners and losers, right? We're the winners, they're the losers. We can tell God all the great things we do. We can brag on ourselves and tell God all the wonderful things we do. And those losers crying out for mercy, like the tax collector, we look down on. That's exactly the situation that Paul was addressing. Some of those who were Jewish followers of Jesus thought they were winners because they were Jewish. Some of those Gentile followers of Jesus thought they were winners because they had superseded Judaism. And Paul is saying, don't believe it for a second, either one of you. Everyone has fallen short. Everyone is broken. But it is that very brokenness that allows us to be open to the grace and mercy of God. Parker Palmer has a book called Healing the Heart of Democracy. And in it, he talks about heartbreaking. And he said, sometimes, you know, hearts break into pieces, become fragmented, and people are destroyed by their heartbreak. But then there are other times when our hearts break open. And it's when our hearts break open that we are able to receive not only God's love and presence, but when we can receive our neighbor as well. Sometimes in the Christian tradition, St. Paul's words have been used to say we are all almost irredeemably stuck in our brokenness. But that's not what he says. That's only half of what he says. He says the very fact that we cry out for mercy, the very fact that we recognize our brokenness, is the beginning of our relationship with the God whose mercy is beyond our imagining. We've been choosing, or actually I chose, based on our study book, the texts for these sermons during Lent. It's interesting how, however, the text for today from the lectionary kind of segues into what we're doing, because it's from the Gospel of John, chapter 4. Jesus is traveling through Samaria, and he meets a woman at a well. This is the least likely person in the world you would ever want to encounter if you were a Jewish religious leader. She is a woman. She is a Samaritan. The Samaritans being despised, looked down upon by Jews. And she's been married again and again and again and again, and the man she's living with is not her husband, which I believe is a sign that she's more sinned against than sinning, quite frankly, because in those days it was difficult, close to impossible, for a woman to divorce her husband, but it was very easy for a man to divorce his wife, and one of the primary reasons was she could not have children. My guess is this woman can't have children. And so she's been passed from man to man to man to man until one will allow her to live in his household but won't marry her, because why marry her if she can't have children? He will allow her, however, to do the servant's chores, like going to get the water from the well. The interesting thing about this story is that when this woman talks to Jesus and he tells her about a water that he has to offer where she will never thirst, about a God that we worship in spirit and truth, she wants that so badly. Her life has broken open to the presence of Jesus in such a way that she goes back to her people and she says, I've met a man who told me everything I ever did, which kind of began the tradition of exaggerating and preaching. He didn't tell her everything she had ever did, but he told her a lot. But she was preaching. The first preacher of the gospel was a Samaritan woman who had been married numerous times and was living with a man to whom she was not married. As a member of the Board of Ordained Ministry of the Tennessee Conference, I can assure you she would never pass through our process. Frankly, Jesus wouldn't either. And yet he chose her. And why did he choose her? Because in her brokenness, her life broke open to the grace and mercy of God. And it was so good that she couldn't help but tell other people about it. It's kind of odd that the thing that stands in the way of our receiving grace and mercy is the idea that we don't need it. We do perfectly well on our own, right? Actually, we don't need it because we do things for God. God doesn't have to do stuff for us. We're self-sufficient. And that's what keeps us from acknowledging that brokenness, acknowledging our hearts have broken open, and receiving the grace that only comes to the broken and the brokenhearted. So folks, I got some bad news for you, and I got some good news for you. The bad news is we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the good news is, for that very reason, Jesus comes to us, offering us grace and mercy, available only to the broken and the brokenhearted. Thanks be to God.